Hello, happy Monday. Welcome to another episode of the Clippers Beat Podcast. It's your girl, your host, Nikki Kay. And the first episode here since the Western Conference playoffs have begun, the NBA playoffs have begun, and the Clippers facing the almighty Golden State Warriors. They're currently trailing in the series, down one game. And so in order to give me a good little sense of what to expect in game two, I'm bringing in resident Golden State fan, although I think he might be upset that I'm titling him as such. Aaron Lars Sewell, who's actually the host of another Los Angeles-based podcast. He hosts the official Lakers podcast, but when you want some good intel on what to expect from a team, you got to call in the fans, right? So that's why, Aaron, happy Monday. Good morning. Sorry about your San Jose Sharks, but here we are.
Here we are. Thank you for that glorious introduction. I think I need you to do some opens for my show, because if I was capable, I would be blushing right now.
Oh, there you go. Well, you know what? I know that there's no embarrassment of riches up there, up north, being a fan in when it comes to Northern California sports teams. So I really don't feel any empathy for you coming off of your San Jose Sharks loss last night. But talk to me about the Dubs and what you're feeling as a fan as the team looks to do it yet again this year.
Well, I think that's what it is. And I think it's been kind of a strange season for the Warriors, one because of the Kevin Durant and Draymond Green stuff, but the rumors that have become now that Kevin Durant may leave in free agency or is likely to leave in free agency, and combine that with and you saw this the other night in game one. The Warriors are moving buildings, so this is their last time in Oakland, their last shot at Oracle. And I think some people have some hard feelings about that, so I think it's kind of important that that the Warriors represent the town. And I got to be honest with you, I don't think anybody has much of a chance against them, save for some strange circumstances, injuries. But the Clippers are a pretty good test, especially starting out early in the playoffs.
I mean, you look at the big picture. And even if the Clippers are swept by the Warriors, they're going to put up a fight night in, night out. And could that potentially affect how Golden State moves into a round two matchup, let's say with the Houston Rockets, who just demolished the Jazz last night? Would that maybe beleaguer them a little bit in ahead of the Western Conference Finals?
Well, I think it's actually interesting. And you mentioned Houston, who just embarrassed Utah last night. They couldn't guard James Harden. They're trying to force him right, and it just doesn't work. Mm-hmm. I think that it could possibly do two things. And one, do the Rockets, are they happy to play the Warriors? Presumably the Warriors and presumably the Rockets early, because James Harden gets worn down in playoff series and Chris Paul gets worn down and was out last year and got hurt game five against the Warriors in the Western Conference Finals. So is that easier? And then when you're talking about the Warriors, I think it could go one of two ways. I think it could take a physical toll. Obviously, Patrick Beverley's a really physical guy.
Despite being 11 inches shorter than Kevin Durant.
Right, exactly.
Guarding him, yes.
Exactly. Despite being my size, he's a guy that Kevin Durant and a lot of the guys around the league respect him, but they don't like playing against him, kind of like Marcus Smart, who's out for the Celtics. So I think it could go one of two ways with the Clippers having that first round series against the Warriors and fighting them. I don't think there's any way the Clippers win the series. I think it's possible the Clippers win a game. I doubt it, but I think it's possible. But it could go one of two ways. Does it take a physical toll, possibly even an emotional toll on the Warriors as they go into the second round and theoretically later in the playoffs, much like it did with the Rockets, as I referenced, against the Warriors in the Western Conference Finals last year? Or the Warriors usually sleepwalk through the first round, often through the second round of the playoffs. So I wonder if this will get their focus earlier and it will ultimately be a good thing for the Warriors, kind of a galvanizing thing. One, because the Clippers play just about as hard as anybody in the league. And two, because the Warriors and Clippers have had this rivalry going back a handful of years. They've only played in the playoffs once in that ill-fated Donald Sterling series. They've only played once, but over the years, there's been some animosity between the two, a healthy rivalry. most of the participants on the Clippers side are gone, but Doc Rivers is still there. So I know the Warriors enjoy competing and beating, competing with and beating the Clippers. So I wonder if it, A, could take a physical and emotional toll on them, which may pay off for the rest of the Western Conference down the road, or possibly it could galvanize them and give them a reason to care earlier in the playoffs, which could be bad news for everybody.
Exactly. That is such an interesting dual end of the spectrum sort of thing that you could get from this Warriors team, especially with all the drama that started early on in the season. And it could go one of two ways. Now, I don't think the Warriors disrespect the Clippers, so to speak, but then you look at their 21 turnovers in game one, which might suspect that the sloppiness could point towards a lackadaisical approach. But I don't think that is the one unfortunate thing about the Clippers being edgy, is that the Warriors aren't going to sleep on them moving through. And especially when you have Patrick Beverley antagonizing Kevin Durant, there is going to be no apathy from the Dubs.
Yeah, that's a really good point that you're making. I'll get to the turnovers in a second here, but I have been wondering why we've been referencing Houston a lot, because they have, other than, OKC in 2016 took the Warriors to the brink. But mm-hmm. other than that, it's been, and then, you know, the LeBron Cleveland teams have been at times a fearful opponent. But other than that, it was Houston last year, and Houston has been very specific about poking the Warriors and saying, we're coming for you, we're not afraid of you, and all of that, which I get. And I think that's solid, right? A lot of teams have kind of taken a step back in their team building,
yeah,
taken down their championship aspirations because they think it's futile. We're not going to beat the Warriors, so we'll wait until this dynasty kind of runs its course, and then we'll take our shot at it. And Daryl Morey and the Houston Rockets have very much pointed to the Warriors and said, we're not afraid of you. We're not going to do that. I think that's good. But the Rockets have also taken it a step farther. We believe we should have beat them last year. We think we're going to beat them now. We're not afraid of the Warriors, with very pointed comments. And I don't think that's necessarily the right approach. In team building, yes. But going in the media and giving the Warriors bulletin board material, I think, is kind of a bad idea. Because the way I look at it, the only way the Warriors can lose, the only team that can beat the Warriors is the Warriors. If they get injured, that's a different thing. But the thing that is going to beat the Warriors is if they're not cohesive and don't like each other and aren't getting along. And the Rockets have been giving the Warriors something, an external enemy to point at, as opposed to worried about themselves. So I wonder if the Clippers a little bit are like that for the Warriors. And you're right. Because of that, they're not going to sleepwalk, because the Warriors have the animosity for the Clippers and the healthy rivalry with Doc Rivers at this point. I don't think the Warriors are going to sleepwalk. The turnovers, unfortunately, I don't know. Sometimes it can be from just a lack of effort and just the Warriors not caring about the game and being lackadaisical. But you've also seen that. That's how one of the reasons they lost Game 7 to the Cavs in the year that the Warriors won 73 games, because they just turned the ball over. So at this point, especially Steph, he gets kind of lazy, jump passing, throwing to people he's not looking at. Draymond gets lazy with his passing too. So at this point for the Warriors, I think that's kind of more just a feature than a bug. It infuriates Steve Kerr. It infuriates me when I'm watching. Yeah. But I think it's just who they are, and part of the free-flowing game and the passing game and all of that. I think it is just a feature, not a bug. So I don't know that necessarily speaks to a lack of focus. It does speak to a lack of focus, but I don't think it necessarily speaks to a lack of focus on their opponent or them taking the Clippers lightly or for granted. Because at this point, the Warriors just turn the ball over in every situation too much.
Yeah. And you know what? I've even talked to Steve Kerr about that in years past. And his response to that is like, sometimes this team is trying to hit home runs when all you really need is a single, get on base, you know? Right. And so it's just, you're doing too much, you know? And that's what the Warriors can do. And it's also going to be a flaw at times, because, you know, you don't need to hit home runs every time you're at plate.
Well, yeah, that's how they're going to, if the Warriors lose games, I don't think the Warriors are going to go 16-0 in the postseason. I think they may get close, but if they lose games, or if somebody pushes them in a series or beats them in a series, I think the thing when we diagnose it, the main thing, if we take injuries out of it, the main thing we're going to look at, we're going to go back and say, yeah, the Warriors turned the ball over too much and gave up offensive rebounds to whoever their opponent is. And those are the two ways that the Warriors get beat. One, look, the offensive rebound, them on the defensive glass. It's been better with Boogie Cousins, but they're not going to be a great defensive rebounding team because often their best lineups are pretty small. But the turnovers is something they can control, and they just don't seem to have the ability to do it. So I get why Steve Kerr, that's what gets Steve Kerr breaking those clipboards. You see the little funny memes of Steve Kerr breaking clipboards, and that's what it is. I also think you can have that conversation with Steven Adams. Go back to your OKC days and have that conversation with Steven Adams too.
Yes, exactly. No. And, I mean, unfortunately, I know this isn't a Warriors podcast, but I do feel like there's an inevitable sort of doom. And I'm obviously, I'd say amongst the majority in that belief that the Clippers, the offense, the star power just isn't quite on par with what you're facing in Golden State. And there's nothing shameful in that because this Clippers team has overachieved. And I would have to commend the half court defense in game one. I just think the production offensively couldn't hang, especially like, what was it? It was tied at 51 with just over 3 minutes to go in the first half. And that's like, you know, that could be a little bit of momentum for the visiting team in the heading into halftime. But then Steph Curry just comes in and goes nuclear, but it's nothing to be unexpected from him and what he normally does. So the Clippers, I think, biggest hope is when that, I think it's like what, at the start of the second quarter when Steph and Kevin are both on the bench, and you know, you've got Lou and Trez out there cranking for the Clippers bench, but ultimately the offensive production just isn't there.
But you said it right, there's no shame in that. I mean, Steph Curry does that to everyone. The Warriors probably have, with apologies to James Harden, the Warriors probably have the two best players in the NBA, at least the two best offensive players when you take into account the efficiency. James Harden's incredible, so I don't want to slight James Harden. But I mean, look, Kevin Durant and Steph Curry and then Klay Thompson and Draymond. And Draymond came out and made a bunch of threes. If Draymond is shooting like that, you can't.
Yeah.
You can't, because you have to focus your defense. You have to give something up. The Warriors start five All-Stars from just last year. So you have to give something up. And teams do this, and in my opinion, they should. They're going to try to slow down. You're not going to stop Steph. You're not going to stop KD. The Clippers did a good job in holding down Klay Thompson. So what are you going to give up? You can't guard everything. You're going to give up threes to Boogie Cousins. You're going to give up threes to Andre Iguodala when it's the death lineup. You're going to give up threes to Draymond Green.
Yeah.
And Draymond made his first three threes, and Draymond had 17 points. If Draymond is going to shoot the ball well,
he looks like
he's shooting with a backpack on. But if he shoots the ball well and makes threes, you're not going to beat them. The numbers just don't work. It is probably the most talented team in the history of the NBA, maybe the best team in the history of the NBA. And if the ancillary guys, the others, as Shaq calls them, if those guys are going to make shots in addition to staffing, you're just not going to win. But I think you're right, though. The one place that the Clippers do have an advantage, Lou Williams has played really well. Was good in the opener on Saturday. Trez was really good on Saturday, too. Lou Williams has always given the Warriors problems. The Warriors try to put Klay Thompson on him. But he had a 50 piece last year. I think it was in Oracle. Maybe it was in LA. I think it was in Oracle, though. And it was the first time the Clippers had beaten the Warriors in like 18 games. So he gives the Warriors problem. The Warriors don't have a lot of depth, despite, you know, Andre Iguodala is still a good player, especially in the playoffs. Sean Livingston, his age is kind of catching up with him. Kevon Looney's okay off the bench. But the Warriors don't have a lot of depth. So I think you're right. The one place the Clippers can possibly take advantage is Montrez and Lou Williams in the beginning of the second and beginning of the fourth quarters, as you mentioned.
Tough outing for Boogie in his first playoff game with the Dubs. Do you see it trending upward for him, or do you think this is going to be kind of a wash of a run?
I think in the regular season, I mean, I think for him personally, I think it's been pretty good. that started when he first came in. It kind of gave the Warriors something to re-energize them. And so it started well. They were really good at the beginning. Now, you know, towards the latter half of the season, actually towards the middle of his season, it was pretty bad. Then towards the end, it got a little better. But, you know, I think the question becomes, there are going to be times with Lou Williams on the floor is kind of one of them, but there are going to be times, assuming the Warriors move on, in future series where people are just going to put him in pick and roll jail over and over and over. If the Warriors end up playing the Rockets, Boogie in the pick and roll guarding Harden is not something the Warriors are going to want to do much. He's played well personally. He's made himself some money, shown that he appears healthy. But I think there are matchups that are going to be real problems for him. And then, you know, the Warriors' best lineup, the best lineup in the NBA, is still the Hamptons five. I think the question becomes, now that the playoffs are here, how willing is Steve Kerr to sit Boogie when it looks like it's not working? How does Boogie handle that? Because he obviously is playing to show everybody he can still play and is healthy and is still an all-star type player to make some money this offseason. So I think there are going to be times where Boogie doesn't play much. In some matchups, he's going to be helpful. Offensively against the Rockets, he would be very helpful because as the Rockets tried to switch everything last year against the Warriors, they don't switch as much this year. But if they try to employ that again and make the Warriors play isolation ball and stop all the beautiful game stuff, then you can, you know, throw it down to Boogie and he can just bludgeon Chris Paul and get a bucket. But on defense, he's going to have real trouble guarding guys in the pick and roll. So I think the thing to watch is how much leash Steve Kerr gives Boogie and when he pulls him. And if there are games where he doesn't play much, he'll start but doesn't play a whole lot. You know, Boogie obviously is one of those high motor, very competitive guys who has had a reputation for having some personality stuff. I'm talking to all the Warriors guys, that hasn't been the case this year at all. Yeah. Everybody loves him, but you know, in his first playoffs, how's he gonna react to games he doesn't play well? It was a good start. He fouled out, didn't play well on Saturday, and fouled out and seemed to take it okay. So I guess for the Warriors and for Boogie, hopefully that's the start of a trend. But I think it's definitely going to be something to watch.
One of my favorite post-game quotes to emerge was Steve Kerr in discussing the texts traded between Patrick Beverley and Kevin Durant, you know, saying that the Clippers had made a lot of good trades this season, and that might have been one of the best because KD now has two texts, and we all know that seven texts in the postseason means you're suspended for a game. Do you foresee that being an issue for KD moving forward?
Yeah, I think it is. I think it's something to watch. KD's response when asked about it said, no, I'm not worried about it because I can control myself. But
can he?
Yeah, I mean, that's a fair question. Look, the Warriors, I mean, there was a variety of factors and full credit. There's no asterisks in the record book, so full credit to the Cavs. But a lot of Warriors fans and a lot of just NBA people would tell you that the Warriors lost to the Cavs in 2016 because Draymond got suspended. Mm-hmm. And there was obviously, we talked about it earlier, the blow up between Draymond and Durant this year. So can both of those guys, but in this case, can KD, you know, can he manage his emotions? What about, you know, obviously that OKC didn't look so great yesterday. Portland beat him up pretty good. OKC came back. But what if there's a series down the line where Kevin Durant is back in Oklahoma City in the playoffs for the first time? You know, so there's going to be situations where I'm not as convinced that he will be able to manage it. You know, I think where that comes is managing it here tonight in game two and the rest of the series against the Clippers, which, you know, I don't think is going to be all that competitive to save some of those blowups for down the road. But it was a funny quote from Steve Kerr, and he's right. Clippers fans, everybody listening out there, you're going to trade as much as everybody likes Pat Bev, and he's a good player. If you could start the game without Pat Bev and the Warriors have to start without Kevin Durant, you're going to take that trade every time. So maybe that is part of the strategy in game two, is to try to continue that, and maybe you do that for earlier in the game and trying to get that. It's something that happens in hockey, right? They don't fight that much anymore, but you know, teams will have a goon to try to goad a better player on the other team into a fight. We'll fight. We'll both sit down for 5 minutes, and you're more valuable to your team than I am. I'm talking to you specifically. Yeah. Nikki, more valuable than I am. So
if we get
in a fight. And we both have to sit for 5 minutes. My team is better off because you're better than I am.
Strategic buggery there. I love it. Now, I know it may be futile, but one of my favorite things about the playoffs is just the chess game that evolves within each series and the counter moves that coaches and staffs can make in terms of lineups, adjustments, etc. Do you see, I know it may be a little bit dim for the Clippers in terms of their overall lack of weapons, but do you see any potential counter moves they can make heading into game two?
You know, I think they played it right, actually. I don't know that there's anything other than, honestly, Patrick Beverley trying to get under KD's skin a little earlier. Because as great as KD is, he is, when he plays one-on-one, when he feels challenged and goes one-on-one, that seems to be to the detriment of Steph, to the detriment of Clay, and to the detriment of the Warriors offense. And again, can you get a dual ejection again? So I think Pat challenging physically and emotionally, going after KD a little earlier, I think that is probably a good strategy. But other than that, I think the Clippers played it okay, right? Just if Draymond is going to, again, we talked about earlier, if Draymond's going to go 3-for-3 from three in the first quarter, you lose. But they did a good job. KD obviously got ejected, but KD had a good game, didn't have a great game. Klay Thompson didn't do a whole lot. Boogie fouled out. So I think the game plan was sound. But like Steph has been wearing his contacts for 13 games and has shot over 50% from three in 10 of those 13 games. This is what Steph Curry's going to do, probably. So you can hope that the Warriors don't shoot the ball as well. Hoping for Steph not to shoot the ball as well is probably a fool's errand. But I think Doc Rivers, I think the game plan was sound. You hope that, you know, Boogie didn't play well, but you hope Draymond doesn't make shots. You hope Andre Iguodala doesn't make shots. The Clippers didn't get a lot from my old buddy Zoo. He wasn't great on Saturday.
Oh, man.
But I think you have to I think you have to go to Lou Will a little bit earlier and try to get Boogie in more pick and roll and with Trez, because he puts a lot of pressure on the rim. The Warriors also seem to have had some trouble over the years with athletic kind of hard playing big men. So the talent gap is what it is.
Yeah.
So I think the Clippers game plan was pretty sound, and basically you're going to have to hope that you minimize the explosions from Steph and KD, keep Clay where he is, and Draymond misses shots.
Man, it's just like hoping for the perfect confluence of any sort of weakness you might be able to poke in the chainmail of the Warriors' armor. But that being said, all in all, you got to love the Clippers fight. Now, Aaron, I want to give you a chance to chime in on your thoughts around the Western Conference, particularly after what you've seen in the opening round of playoff action here. Are you forecasting any upsets or what do you see these games and series going to between the respective teams?
Well, you know, what's interesting is, are we talking about like a betting upset or are we talking about a seeding upset? Because in Portland, OKC, Portland's the 3 seed, OKC is the 6 seed, but OKC was actually favored in Vegas. So it looks like I went in expecting OKC to win the series, but Paul George doesn't look completely healthy. Looks like, you know, some of his shot attempts, he's kind of wincing. And I thought without Nurkic for the Blazers, I thought Steven Adams was going to just kill them in the paint. I've been worried about Enes Kanter's defense, but he held up reasonably well, was really good rebounding on the offensive glass, especially scored some points, had 20 and 18 last night. So I was very surprised. I was also interested to see, I thought that that OKC could kind of guard Portland in a similar way to how New Orleans did in the playoffs last year and really trap trap Dame and force other people to play. And they weren't able to do that. Dame was pretty good. CJ McCollum was good. That's the other place I thought Nurkic, the loss of Nurkic was going to be a problem, because if Dame got trapped, Nurkic is a really good passer in the short role. He's not as good as Draymond, but in a similar kind of way, when Steph gets trapped and the Warriors can play 4-on-3 with Draymond going downhill as the decision maker, Nurkic has become pretty good at that too. Cantor's not as skilled with that. So I thought that was going to be a problem. So I was really impressed with the Portland effort yesterday. The crowd in the Moda Center is one of the best in the league, as is the crowd in OKC.
Yeah.
So I was surprised there, but I don't know if Paul George can't shoot it. If Paul George isn't fully healthy, I think OKC is in trouble.
Yeah, it's interesting, because I would pick Oklahoma City to win that series too. I do think their opening round game had a couple of outliers. Typically, Steven, especially after having been teammates and buddies with Ennis for so long, like he knows Cantor's game and he knows how to stop him. So I'm a little bit surprised that Ennis was able to go off like he did in the first game. I also do think, though, that that might have been a little bit of a revenge from can't play Cantor. Ennis is an avengeful guy, but I'm sure it felt great to be able to go off against a former team that,
Billy Donovan specifically, right?
Yeah, exactly. And I never got that sort of chip on Ennis's shoulder. He loves the Thunder so much. So, but I'm sure it did feel good to go out and get his own. That being said, you're completely spot on with Paul George. If the Thunder can only make 4 threes in a game, with him not being able to shoot, then they're in trouble. So
they just can't shoot anyway. The Thunder as a team can't shoot.
Yeah.
The one guy that, T. Ferg has been decent this year, especially early, but the one guy that buoyed all of that was Paul George, who was really like basically 90% Steph Curry for a lot of the year, but he doesn't look healthy. And if he can't shoot, that means, like, by definition, they can't shoot, and that's a problem.
That is a little bit of an issue. Now, I have San Antonio beating Denver. I'm calling that one.
I agree with you completely. I think, look, if you're Denver, have nobody other than Paul Millsap has been in the playoffs, and that includes Mike Malone.
Yeah.
At least as a head coach. So, The worst matchup is somebody that just is going to execute you to death, like San Antonio has Pop. I think that Denver is much more talented. They have more firepower. But San Antonio is disciplined. I think a key to this series is making Nikola Jokic shoot threes, whether it's LaMarcus Aldridge or if it's Jakob Poeltl, staying down on his pump fakes and making him shoot them, because if you get up on him, he's going to drive past you. If you don't, he's going to if you go for the pump fake, he's going to drive past you. If you give him too much room, he has the passing lane. So I think the question is, do you stay down and make Nikola Jokic shoot threes in that? But if you're Denver, look, you were right there. Jamal Murray missed a wide open elbow jumper to take the lead and probably win the game and then turn the ball over. Could that be playoff jitters? Yes, but it wasn't like the San Antonio just completely dominated Denver. So I think Denver has some life. I think they just didn't make shots, and San Antonio did, which San Antonio sometimes does, but isn't always going to because of their shot profile. So I still think San Antonio probably wins the series, but I actually feel better about Denver after game one than I did going into it.
Okay. And that you're right. There are signs of life within the Nuggets. Now, Utah, Houston, is that going to be a sweep?
No, I think Utah will fight and probably win two games. But they're saying, and Ricky Rubio said after the game, that this was not how we're going to guard James Harden just for the game, but this is how we're going to guard him for the series. Play his left hand, force him right, try to force him to the rim against Gobert. Gobert still isn't quite mobile enough, in my opinion, for that deep drop and then to be able to come out and challenge Harden and challenge CP3. But if you're going to play Harden like that, he's a willing passer. He's still going to get his 30. He's going to carve you up. So I don't know I think maybe you have to double him and force somebody else and switch up the coverages. But if you're just going to sit on his left hand and force him right and try to force him to the rim, he's seen it before. And yeah. he's gonna be able to adjust to it. The Lakers, in fact, did that a lot and had some success. Milwaukee did it even shading behind him to his left so that he couldn't get to a step back. So this is not something, and James Harden is an offensive genius. And I said earlier, Durant and Steph are probably, in my opinion, the two best offensive players in the league. Yeah. James Harden is right there, and he is an offensive genius. So you're not going to force him into doing things that he doesn't want to do. It may take him a second to figure out what you're doing, but once he figures it out, he's going to score. There's nothing you can do about it. So I think Utah switching up the coverages and trying to have to make James Harden figure out what he's going to be seeing in possession after possession after possession, and can they wear him down? And also, he didn't get a lot of foul calls last night. That kind of is a playoff thing, so we'll see if that continues. And if Utah can keep Harden off the line, I think they can win a game or two. I worry about the Utah offense. I don't think they can score enough to beat the Rockets four times.
Absolutely, and I do think ultimately, in the grand scheme of the playoff picture in general, it will be healthier to have the Rockets face the Warriors in the second round. Keeps that door open a crack just a little bit more for a little bit livelier Harden and Chris Paul. So hopefully that spices things up a little bit here. And I do, Aaron, want to get your thoughts moving forward, not in this podcast, but I can't wait to hear what your thoughts will be on the upcoming season of free agency and movement, as the team you love so much might lose the biggest star. So it's going to be an exciting next couple of months for the NBA. And I'm guessing, what do you say, Warriors in four?
Yes, I think it's a hard fought four. And I think the Clippers can, will fight them and have shown some fight, and full credit to the Clippers for that. A lot of respect to the Clippers. And the Clippers, I've heard from the Warriors guys, I've heard from the Lakers guys in traveling around the country with them, and I've a lot of respect to the Clippers. The Clippers are the Clippers and the Pacers are the two teams that guys like playing the least, that play the hardest, get in your face the most. So full credit to the Clippers for that. I think they fight the Warriors. I think they push them, the Warriors, in individual games, a little bit like we saw on Saturday, but I don't think there's enough firepower to beat the Warriors.
I'm with you on that one, but you know what? It's a fun, overachieving team.
That's right.
Yeah.
And it's incredibly well set up going forward. The Clippers have really good books, have improved the roster with a lot of young talent, and have really good books and spot for guys in free agency. So I think the Clippers are in a really good spot.
Aaron Larsoul of the Official Lakers Podcast, thank you so much for giving us some of your time this morning, and I'll see you at the next couple of games. But Aaron, before we go, where can listeners find you and consume your content as a NBA aficionado?
Well, you can find me at Aaron Larsoul, Larsuel is my last name, on Twitter. Same thing on Instagram. And then you can find the Official Lakers Podcast on Lakers.com in the multimedia tab. You can find it on iTunes, on PodcastOne.com, Podcast One app, Google, anywhere you get your podcast, you can find the Official Lakers Podcast. And we'll talk soon. And I can't wait to see you games 3 and 4. Let's go. Back in Staples Center. Let's go.
Aaron. Hey, yes, 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 yes. Happy Monday. Thanks for tuning in to another episode of the Clippers Beat. Remember, you can like, comment, and subscribe. You can find this podcast anywhere you get your pods at, or at clnsmedia.com.